Okay, agenda items 8 and 9 will be taken up tomorrow on Friday. Take us down to number 10, which deer license allocation. Tony?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commission members. Tony Life, Director of the Wildlife Division, with me here today. Kevin Roebling, Special Projects Coordinator for the Department. You'll see on your agenda, the agenda item that we're here to talk about is the deer license allocation. On November 20th, which was the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, we appeared before the Interim Rules Review Committee. That's a committee made of six legislators that are appointed by their respective bodies, three from the House of Representatives, three from the Senate. The role of the Rules Review Committee is to review and ultimately approve, if you will, the rules that are adopted by the administrative agents within the executive branch in the interim between legislative sessions. Now, I say approve in the fact that the motion that is typically made for rules to move forward be prior to in order that allows them to be filed with the Secretary of State, the motion is typically that the rule promulgation process is complete. That's the language that's typically used in those motions. The committee has two other alternatives essentially available to them. One of them is to exercise the authority that's afforded to that committee by the state constitution, Article 3, Section 30 grants this interim committee the ability to suspend a rule, which would mean it would essentially end the process on that rule. It would be done. The second option available to the committee is listed in State Statute 1-26-4.7. That statute grants the ability of the Rules Committee to revert the rule to a previous step. So with those options available, the Rules Committee initially, there was a motion to that the rules process was complete. The first time that motion was made, it failed for lack of a second. A second attempt at that motion did receive a second and ultimately died on a 3-3 vote. It is a majority of the members that are at the committee meeting that need to be in affirmative for a motion to pass. So that motion failed on a 3-3 vote. Then a motion was made to revert the rule to a previous step, and that motion passed 6-0. So essentially what the Rules Committee did was revert the rule that you adopted at your meeting in Deadwood in October back to you for additional consideration or action. I've been presenting rules to the committee for 10 plus years now. Twice before, we've had rules that were reverted back after they were presented. One of those, the most recent of those was, I believe 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, when the commission adopted rules pertaining to issuance of an auction license for bighorn sheep. Coincidentally, that's an action item we're going to talk about later today. But when those rules were initially presented to the Rules Committee, they did not approve those. In the end, they were seeking some more information about the use of the dollars that were going to be collected. We were able to provide those, and at a subsequent meeting of the Rules Committee, they ultimately then approved those or allowed those to be filed with the Secretary of State. The other occurrence when rules were reverted back to the commission was a few years prior to that. I don't remember the exact year, but there were rules pertaining to the use of box traps, or not box traps, excuse me, traps, or these conibear traps, how they had to be recessed into a box when being used on public land to avoid conflicts with dogs. Not much different than our conversation we had earlier this year about snares. Those rules were reverted to the commission, and in response at that time, The commission issued an additional notice of public hearing for a subsequent commission meeting when the commission then adopted changes to those rules, made some adjustments to those rules, and then that those newly adopted rules were then approved by the interim rules committee and were filed. Again, those were two instances in how things have been handled in the past. There's been some very good press coverage. I believe we're able to send to you the link to the discussion that occurred among the interim rules committee members prior to making their motion. Typically, a rule reversion motion is accompanied by a reason of one of the nine subparagraphs listed in 126-4.7. In this particular case, there was no reference to those clauses, if you will, those potential reversion reasons that I'm aware of, and I'm not sure because the minutes have not been published from that meeting yet, so we're unsure exactly what the basis was. I think ultimately that will be reflective at some point of the reasoning, but none was given at the time that the motion was made. So where does that leave the commission? Ultimately, the commission, as directed by the committee, is directed to step back to a previous step. The committee did not identify the specific step that the commission needed to revert to in their process. So I believe that's entirely up to you, whether you wanted to go all the way to the beginning of seeking public input to a vote of the same rule or maybe some adjustments to those rules. I don't believe that there is any sidebars on you on what you would like to do with this, the rules that you adopted previously when you met in Deadwood. Kevin, anything to add to where we're at right now? With that, Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to help you through what your next step is with these particular set of rules.
Okay, thank you. are there any comments? Right. Just for clarity's sake, I guess, in my own mind, the process that the commission went through and the Game Fish and Parks went through to present this rule change, there were no violations in our presentation or the way we presented it or the steps that we have to go through to present a rule change. Am I correct in that from what you've been able to observe?
Mr. Chairman, the committee did not point to any flaws in the process, nor did they point to any flaws within the authority that rests with this commission. Those are two very important elements that go into their process that they go through prior to voting. So once again, there was no question of authority expressed. The commission acted within the scope of the authority afforded to them by state statute. And secondly, there was no criticism or there was no problem with the process. I think what happened was many of those same individuals that have contacted many of you and us in the course of this process also contacted some of those legislators expressing their disappointment with the action that the commission took. Many of them have told me that has occurred, and that's partly, I think, an element that came into play when they took the rule under consideration. But process-wise, no issues identified. Authority-wise, no issues were identified by the committee.
So we still have no formal reason why they were rejected then?
Correct, Mr. Chairman, there was some discussion that occurred among members about the number of people who did not like the changes. There was also some discussion about how non-residents played into the distribution. And as an example, the action that the committee took just prior to hearing these rules, they actually reverted a different set of rules for Department of Revenue, in which they specifically cited one of the elements within 126.4.7. But again, none of those, nothing was cited when these rules were reverted. So we're not entirely sure what the basis of the reversion was.
Is it within their authority, just because they do not like the rule, that they can reject it?
There is one of those subparagraphs within that statute. I believe it's number 8 in there, and I can recite that for you here. Subparagraph 8 says, the proposed rule is not a reasonable implementation of the law as it affects the convenience of the general public or persons likely affected by the proposed rule. So that's, I believe that provision is up for debate or discussion of whether or not that does expand the latitude of the committee to act.
It seems like a stretch to me, but you know, and I'm just kind of shooting from the hip here, but it would seem to me that the commission, until you have a reason to change the rule, unless you know what is wrong with the rule change, it would seem to me that it's kind of silly to try to change it when we have no reason, no basis from the committee on why it was rejected. I mean, we can certainly change it. We can go back to the beginning and start all over, but what's to say we submit it again and they don't like the rule, so they reject it? I mean, I guess I'm a little confused by just, you know, where we ought to go with it.
Mr. Chairman, I can understand that perspective, and obviously it's not possible for me to convey to you anything that represents the committee's opinion or position on that. That wasn't directly given to us in the hearing.
Do you expect to get something from them?
We have not been advised that any subsequent correspondence is coming from the committee other than ultimately the minutes of the meeting, which won't be improved until a new committee is formed and a new committee meets, which typically would not occur until about a month after the legislative session ends, which would be mid-April in this case.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Questions, Scott?
I have one. Commissioner Phillips here. Can this commission request some specific written reasons from this committee as to why and where they want us to go? Could we request that they give us something in writing so we would know where to go from here?
I guess I might defer to maybe some past legislators or some legal counsel on that one of what options are available with that.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm definitely not legal counsel. I am a has-been, but this is Commissioner Olson. And, you know, that committee, you know, by the time that we were to banter back and forth with questions, is going to be defunct. You know, some of those the present for that vote are no longer, didn't win their re-election bids, and it's not to say that the leadership in both the House or the Senate is going to reappoint the same members to that committee. So finding that, I think it would be more of a task for the Legislative Research Council to tell us what their rationale for the committee sending it back, but we'd be forcing them to guess as we're guessing now. And I guess what I had some questions too that maybe would help gin up next steps for us, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman. Kevin, you or Director Life could remind me in 100 words or less what the goal was for making the changes to the deer allocation system. I was at dinner last night with a friend that's a sportsman that isn't on the commission side on this deal, and he reminded me, he said, well, you've lost the battle because it takes you guys too long to explain what the heck you were trying to do anyway. And so once I finally explained, he goes, yep, well, I believe that there's merit in what you're trying to do, but you got to shorten it up. But just for review, because there are some new faces here, can you just remind me what was our goal for going through 18 months worth of changes and, you know, 90 days of public hearings on this? And then I have some follow-up questions, Mr. Chairman, if that's all right.
So Kevin Roblin here, Special Projects Coordinator with Game Fish and Parks. You know, 100 words or less, to get every deer hunter that applies for West River deer, East River deer, Black Hills deer, and muzzleloader deer a better chance of drawing their preferred deer license, all of those deer hunters. Not just some of those deer hunters, but all deer hunters that apply for those four seasons a better chance at drawing their preferred deer license.
Mr. Chairman, sorry if I continue.
Go ahead.
And Kevin, I believe with my heart of hearts that we did that. I really do believe that the increase, you know, whether it be 9% East River or 30% West River or XYZ, I think that the numbers are there, and we unfortunately have to let this thing soak for a year or two to prove that we are right. But in the meantime, I've been contacted even since we thought that we were done with this, that, you know, people asking me why I was supportive of it. And I go back to the reason that I come to every one of these meetings, and that's to enhance opportunities for the next generation of South Dakota outdoorsmen. And you know, that's those 9, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds. And part of my argument was always that. And they said, well, you did nothing through this. This doesn't help that the youth, you know, get that initial buck tag or whatever. You know, they sometimes are going to have to wait till they're 15 to draw a tag, and that, you know, kind of goes, we got to hook them earlier. And I totally agree with that. So one of the things I would like you guys to maybe do a little research on, if you don't mind, and if it's okay with the chair, and come back to us tomorrow with, what can we do? What amendments can we make to this that I think would help satisfy the legislature that we didn't just puff up our chest? We're not an equal and a branch of government like the legislature is. We're not part of, you know, we are part of the one branch of those, but we aren't going to try to compete with them. At least I certainly don't want to. But if we make some changes to this, I think that we can maybe curb some of the angst that some of the legislators are feeling from their constituents are hearing from. So if you could just do a little research to see what we could do, maybe come up with something totally out of the box that would give that youth that a better chance. I'd gladly give up my, even another percentage out of my pool to help that kid get his or her first opportunity to have a deer license. So that's the one thing I would like for you guys to consider overnight. And I've got some ideas, and we can talk about it, you know, whenever you'd like. But that's one thing. And then it still seems that there's a lot of pain that these, and it goes back to what, you know, Commissioner Jensen and everybody's trying to work on is a happy medium with our non-residents. And we need the revenue, and we rely on the revenue, and we welcome non-resident hunters to South Dakota. But when they start to cut in front of us, whether it be for duck hunting or deer hunting, people start to get their hackles up. And so could you look at perhaps as a second part of maybe making a two-part amendment to this that we could send back to the Rules Committee, what we could do to make sure that South Dakota residents have a better opportunity at leftover licenses. And I think that might help take a little bit more of the pain out of it. If people are true in what they say, that you know, this is breaking up family traditions, if we find a way to make sure that youths get to cut in line, or they get a better shot or a better average at getting that license, is one thing. And then another, if we could, again, put our South Dakota residents in line before the non-residents, I think that those two things may go a long ways to helping the legislature take a more favorable eye at our proposal. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Other comments, questions? If, Tony, if we make changes to this, the way it presently sets, wouldn't that require to go back through the public comment process to comment on those changes?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. It all depends on the scope of those changes. The initial public notice and the draft rules that were published outlined a scope of changes that the commission was considering making changes on. It depends on how substantive these other additional changes that Commissioner Olson has asked us to craft up and work with him on. I would say my initial blush or initial take on what I'm hearing from him is that it would require an additional public notice because those changes are going to be more substantive than the original public notice that was made prior to both the September and the October meetings. So if that were the path that the commission chose to follow, we would need to have an additional public notice and hearing. I initially believe that's probably what it's going to take in this case.
Yeah, that would be my feeling too, I think, is
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you. If you bring some suggestions tomorrow, could you outline which ones you think we'd have to open up the public comments to and which ones are within the scope of our authority without public comments?
Sure can and will do that, Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you.
Kevin, when you were talking about the reason that we did this in the first place, I mean, one of the reasons, of course, that we put in the letter that's on the website is that we're having another 3,500 additional hunters given the opportunity to hunt with this change too, right?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
Commissioner Jensen, that's absolutely correct. You know, we have 52,000 unique deer hunters in the state that applied in 2017. 16,000 of those deer hunters applied for two or more seasons. So looking at those 16,000 then, those 16,000 deer hunters submitted 38,000 applications. So by making them make a preferred choice in that first draw, we're removing 21,500 applications from that first draw to those four seasons. I know that gets a little bit confusing, but at the end of the day, that increases draw probabilities. What that'll also do is get people that were unsuccessful in 2017, get them off the sidelines. Right now we have quite a few people, about 40% of the folks that apply for a deer license in South Dakota, they're sitting on the sidelines every year because they're not drawing a deer license, especially those that only put in for one season. So this change would potentially get about 3,500, even 3,800 is the actual number, of those people off the sidelines. It's not necessarily new hunters. It's just people that didn't get to hunt that year because they didn't draw a license. That is an absolute goal of the department, is to try to maximize recreational opportunity and get as many people in the woods or in those fields as possible.
And just to follow up, I mean, of all the different things we've heard, and we've heard many things, nobody has contested that, at least I don't think anybody has contested the validity of that 3,500 number.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard number to dispute because you take that many applications out and you are going to have more people more often drawing a deer license year in and year out, because there's going to be less people year in and year out drawing two deer licenses in the first draw. And that is the reality of it. We will be freeing up additional licenses for folks that are unsuccessful otherwise that would be getting a license under this potential new system. The numbers shouldn't lie. And if one thing we have to remember too, let's say that 3,800 number doesn't get to where we think it's going to get. Who gets those 3,800 licenses? It's the person who already has a license. So in a sense, that draw allocation system we have today, it'd be very similar, where folks would still have an opportunity to get 2, 3, 5, 9 deer licenses in a given year. It's just pushing that back till the third draw is when those folks would be eligible to get multiple licenses. So if those 3,800 don't go to somebody sitting on the sideline, they're going to go to the person who is getting two or three or four deer licenses like they are today. And that's something we got to remember as well.
Thank you.
Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you. I'd like you to talk just a little bit about the changes that have been made for non-residents and how we've backed up their opportunity already in this proposal. It went from being pooled after second to after the third, and that we've already cut into their opportunity some. Could you address that, please?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Phillips, that's correct. So under the current allocation system today, those leftover licenses are pooled for residents and non-residents after the second draw. So going into that third draw today, in 2018, the 2018 draw, once those draws were done in the second draw, whatever was left over was pooled and made available to both residents and non-residents in the third draw. Under the proposal that this commission passed a couple months ago and the Interim Rules Review Committee rejected, those non-residents were pushed actually back until after the third draw, being pooled in the fourth draw then. So in the third draw, only those licenses that were available to non-residents, that 8% for West River deer and Black Hills deer, were available to non-residents in the third draw. Whatever then is left over after the third draw, whatever resident licenses are left over after the third draw, whatever non-resident licenses are left over after the third draw, are then pooled under this proposal in the fourth draw. So yes, we did push those non-residents back an entire draw. And the other stipulation we put on non-residents was the fact that they could only get up to one license through the fourth draw. And residents could get up to nine through the fourth draw. And that was a major change than how our current system works today.
Thank you. Go ahead, Sharp.
Commissioner Sharp here. So Kevin, what I just heard you say is that we have actually limited non-resident hunters' ability to get licensed, because we keep on hearing the drumbeat out there that the only reason we're making this change is so the department can make more money on our non-resident hunters. And what I'm hearing you say is there's absolutely no basis of fact for that statement out there.
Based on those changes I just mentioned, you are correct, Commissioner Sharp. It's very difficult for us to project there would be more non-resident licenses sold under any of these, under the proposal that was in front of the Interim Rules Review Committee. And I say that because this proposal is more restrictive to non-residents. We are pushing that pooled draw back a draw, and we're only allowing those non-residents to pick up one license through the fourth draw. So based on those two things, yes, we would be putting more restrictions on non-resident eligibility. And it's very hard for us to project that this would be a revenue generator for the department. If anything, we would lose money in preference points as a department. And we do project revenue neutral or even a slight decline because of those preference points that folks might not buy anymore. But they could use preference points all the way through the third draw, which is another change. And that does make things confusing. And there is a lot of changes, and that does have a tendency to cause some confusion.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you, Kevin. And this is a publicly broadcast meeting, so I guess the folks out there that are beating that drum that this is a revenue generator for the department, I would ask that they present their facts and figures so we have a better understanding of where they're coming up with this information, and then we can all be on the same page. Because right now, I have not figured out how we're going to make more money. So for those, again, that are beating that drum, I ask that you submit your facts and figures so we can study it as well.
Mr. Chairman, if I may?
Yeah, go ahead.
Commissioner Olson, if I could ask maybe some specific questions or maybe some, I guess, more detailed questions upon your request for additional investigation into potential amendments. When you say youth, can you give me a definition, you know, of youth? What ages are you referring to so we know what data to pull up for you and query and have available for tomorrow?
Sure. Commissioner Olson, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Remind me, is it, it's 12 or is it 10 that they can actually draw a buck tag?
So it's not until they're 12 years of age where they can draw their first buck license or apply for West River Deer, East River Deer, Black Hills, or muzzleloader.
So they could do mentor, and they don't need preference, obviously, for that. They're, and this doesn't even take them out of that pool. You know, they're able to. I think there's a misconception out there that this limits them on just getting those mentored or those youth deer tags, which it doesn't. But what I want to see is that we want to hook those kids earlier so that by the time they're 12, and I'm not saying that all of a sudden everybody just jumps up and you have 5 years preference because you turned 12. You got to go through the process, and you have somebody that's engaged in helping you, guide you, and inform you into, you know, somebody that knows right from wrong while you're out hunting. And so maybe after they apply, there's some type of a cue that that gives them an additional point or two that would just help them out, so it increases that youth opportunity at drawing in their first, you know, get them one at 12 or 13 versus 15.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner, for those details. I mean, would you say we look at up to 18 years of age or 16 years of age or those?
I think if you for me, it's that 12 to 16 is where we want to, in my mind, and I don't even know if that's defined. I mean, it probably goes back to where we come up with the 8% for non-resident licenses in the draw. Whoever came up with that number may have come up with mine too, but it's somewhere between 12 and 16 is what I consider those youth kids. When they can drive themselves around and hunt, that's a totally different deal in my book. I think that we got to get them and get them early as part of our three goals and get them early.
Thank you, Commissioner. That'll help us navigate our way through providing you some information for tomorrow's meeting. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Kathy Peterson, just a question on the special buck. Would you remind me how that works with this current?
So the way special buck is written into the proposal, it would be treated essentially completely separate. Special buck is a unit within West River Deer or a unit within East River Deer, depending on what special buck we're referring to. So when we're referring to West River Special Buck, let's say an individual applies for West River Special Buck, they draw that West River Special Buck license. They would then not be eligible to apply for a West River Deer license in the four available seasons that this proposal is referencing. However, if they were to not draw a West River Special Buck license, they then could apply for a West River Deer license under this proposal. So if they're unsuccessful, let's say back in April for a West River Deer Special Buck, they then could go back into this draw and put their name in the bucket, in the hat, to get a West River Deer license or apply for an East River muzzleloader Black Hills. So that would be how that would work. Now let's say an individual wanted to hunt both sides of the river. And that's something we've heard quite a lot of. And special buck would be the way to do it. So an individual would apply for a special buck West River Deer license. Let's say they draw that license. They then could go in and apply for an East River special buck license that same year and potentially draw it. And in the meantime, when they're doing that, they could accumulate a West River Deer preference point. So they can hunt West River Deer special buck, hunt East River deer under just that regular season, and in the meantime, accumulate a West River Deer preference point. They buy that separately. They can't apply for West River Deer in the first draw, but they could purchase a West River Deer preference point. So then that following year then, they would go in and they would use that West River Deer preference point to get a West River Deer license in the first draw. And then they could submit an application under East River Special Buck and get their East River Special Buck license. And what I could see being done here is they would just alternate every other year, because the beauty of this is they could accumulate a preference point for the season they sat out for, essentially, for that year. And then they'd be able to accumulate at least one point and hunt that following year with that one point in most of our deer hunting units across South Dakota.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question? Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Peterson.
Go ahead, John.
Commissioner Locken here. You know, I'm the new guy. I wasn't here when the process started, but it seems, fill me in a little bit, help me out. What voice did the landowners have And what voice did the people of South Dakota that like own Custer State Park, have paid for Crepe Acres, all these other things. Black Hills National Forest is over 1 million acres. They're getting licenses on that. If you just poll the deer hunters, you're going to get one answer. But a landowner may have a different answer. It's, you know, it's habitat, habitat, habitat. And our farm happens to have a lot of habitat. My brother and I's farm, and it's habitat we bought. We paid for it. We pay taxes on it. I can't think of any family member we have that wants people hunting on our land that already have 3 licenses. They want, you know, we've always tried to help kids out and spread the licenses out a little bit. And here we've, you know, I think we've got a problem right now with the present system. You know, too many licenses are going to too few of people. Were these landowners ever, did they have a voice in this matter?
Commissioner Locke and Kevin Roblin here again. You know, in a lot of the discussions regarding this issue, we did focus a lot on the actual deer hunter. So if the landowner was a deer hunter, an active deer hunter, yes, they would have had a voice in this issue, and all South Dakotans have a voice in this issue. Have we specifically targeted landowners that were non-deer hunters? I can't say we have. However, we have done a lot of media campaigns. We have done a lot of public television shows, Facebook Lives. We've done, you know, a lot of outreach efforts that we've never done with a lot of other topics ever in the history of this department. So I guess I would be comfortable saying a lot of landowners know this is occurring, but you bring up some very valid points, and I can't say that we targeted specifically non-deer hunter landowners.
Any other comments? I think one thing that is clear is that this proposal has had a considerable amount of misunderstanding right from the beginning. It's just kind of amazing to me, but it's been misunderstood and not, I don't know, for some reason people haven't been able to comprehend the scope of it. But yet the reason for the proposal, as you stated when you first sat down there, is very legitimate, to get more hunters the license they desire. So whether we put out too much information or not enough, I don't know what the answer is there, but there has been a lot of misunderstanding about it, and I guess my comment would be that I'm certainly willing to go back and look at other altercations we could make if we've missed something there that we could add that would make it more palatable to the public. I wouldn't be opposed to doing that. I would still like to know why or for what reason we need to do that. I have heard no good reason to do it yet. I guess I have heard rumors that there may be some legislative pursuit of something here. Is there a comment you could make on that? What would be the legislature's alternative or options here? Would there be a comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, the authorities that are granted to you are by state statute. Ultimately, the full legislature and then the governor, of course, have a role in what is in state statute. So any authority that you have is subject to an action by the full legislature. And I've have observed in past years where the legislature has adopted legislation that changed administrative rule, too. It doesn't have to be codified in state law for an action of the full legislature. So those are potential action items that could come out of the legislature. But once again, every authority that you have is granted to you by that legislative body in state statute.
I guess I would like to hear comments from the rest of the commission on what direction you feel we should pursue. Commissioner Olson has stated that he has some ideas to possibly alter the proposal or the rule. How do the rest of you feel about that, or what is your idea? Yes, go ahead, Mary.
Commissioner Boyd here. I do believe that this particular issue was one of the most carefully thought out and thoroughly debated issues that we've handled during my time on the commission. I do believe in the importance of public input, but I think we might be a little short-sighted if that's the only issue that we looked at. And I make that comment based on maybe my thoughts that that's what led to the rules review decision. To the issue at hand today, I do like what Russ is suggesting. Let's take a look at how we can involve youth more in this process, and that is something that I would support.
Other comments?
One, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Phillips here. I certainly think this commission, or I would agree to taking a look at some of the things that have been brought up, looking at the youth, affecting the youth a little bit more. As far as the non-residents, if you bring us some suggestions on, say, pushing them back another draw, please include some numbers so we know how many people will be affected by that. You know, some of our, I wish our resident, non-resident discussion was further along so we'd have a little more understanding of how to address resident, non-residents, but I keep going back to, you know, we have non-resident landowners. We have non-resident landowners that can't get a license to hunt on their own property. So I don't want to continue to ding them further and further back down the process. So if you could bring some numbers to know how many people would be affected if we do make a change with the non-residents.
Commissioner Sharp.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Sharp here. You know, I'm a little reluctant to bring this up, but it appears to me that there's enough discussion items that we can, you know, get more information on, that I'm not so sure it wouldn't be a good idea to just kind of table this for right now, to buy us some time to get more information, to have more thoughtful discussion on this topic for right now. I don't know that we're going to have the answers in the morning. So I would be okay with doing that. That's not in the form of a motion, but I would be okay with doing that because I think we could use some additional time to further review everything we've both heard and want to hear.
Okay, thank you. Locken?
Commissioner Locken, what would be our timeline?
Tony Life here again. The timeline is not limited. I wouldn't say it's unlimited, but there is no clock ticking on a decision here. There are rules pertaining to filing of an administrative rule with the Secretary of State after it's approved by the Rules Committee, but there is no timeline that I can think of initially here. Looking for help from John, doesn't seem to have any there. And of course, if you choose to repropose, if you will, or make some changes, again, there'd be another 30-day period here where we could certainly help get you some additional information. But there's nothing that says you have to decide today, tomorrow, or even at your next meeting in January, ultimately, what you'd like to do with these proposed rules.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Olson, this is getting close to this deal's second birthday. I think it's had plenty of public comment, plenty of time, and plenty of soaking, if you will, to get the information out there. I mean, all I'm asking, and it isn't a motion, it isn't a request, I guess it'd be a direction, I guess, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for you to give to the staff, is just to take a look at some of those options I thought of earlier. And made suggestions on, give us something that we can talk about tomorrow. You know, we've got, thankfully, people listening on the internet, people that are, gonna listen to whatever Bob Mercer writes up about this, and we're gonna hear back from people before this meeting's over. That's the way this works. And so I think that if those are the type of things that, you know, in this social media age, we're hearing from these people before we get done voting. And so I just want to, you know, keep this process moving, because we haven't drug our feet at all, and to push the pause button and wait and see. What are we going to wait and see? I mean, I want to just keep this thing moving. I think that we need to get a firm action plan put in place so that we can get through the draws and everything next year for Special Buck, and that's coming sooner rather than later, and put the rubber to the road on this. So, thanks.
Okay. All right. Are there any other comments before we move on here? Well, let's do this then. Other commissioners may have ideas as well, so let's kind of table it for right now. We'll throw out some things that maybe would be palatable and talk about it a little bit this evening. And we'll bring it back up for a discussion tomorrow. And there's been some requests for information and that type of thing, and we'll talk about it a little bit more tomorrow and decide if we need to put something in a formal change to the rule tomorrow, or whether we let it set, bring it forward again in April, or how we want to proceed. Is that acceptable to everybody? Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.